Call the meeting of the Finance Audit Compliance Facilities and Operations Committee to order. Ms. Doe, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus. Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero. Committee Chair Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Trustee Tim Moore.
Here.
Board Chair Eric Wesowitz.
Here.
Thank you very much. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You do have a quorum present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you very much. We're going to interrupt the normal agenda that we have today for the swearing in of our new trustee, Lee Strom. So at this point in time, I will turn it over to Chair Wasowitz and Trustee Strom to complete the swearing-in ceremony.
I guess we'll share a microphone here, but first of all, really happy to see you here. Now we can have quorum. So, but we need to swear you in first. Okay. So you can repeat after me. I, state your name.
I, Leland Strom.
Do solemnly swear that I will faithfully serve.
Do solemnly swear that I will faithfully serve.
Support, preserve, protect, and defend.
Support, preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the laws thereof.
And the laws thereof.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois and the laws thereof.
The Constitution of the State of Illinois and the laws thereof.
And the Constitution, bylaws, and policies of Northern Illinois University.
And the Constitution, bylaws, and policies of Northern Illinois University.
Finally, I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility.
Finally, I acknowledge the fiduciary responsibility.
That each member of the Board of Trustees has.
That each member of the Board of Trustees has.
And further solemnly swear that I will discharge faithfully my duties as a member of the Board of Trustees of Northern Illinois University to the best of my ability.
And further solemnly swear that I will discharge faithfully my duties as a member of the Board of Trustees of Northern Illinois University to the best of my ability.
You're in the club.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Say a few words.
I am humbled to join this effort here at Northern Illinois and the Board of Trustees. Home for me is just 20 miles west of here. I had my feet on this campus back in the 1970s. This area has been, in essence, home for my family for many, many generations. My agricultural background and roots, this is a great area. If you're in the agricultural space. I've had many unique opportunities in my life and my career to serve at various levels in local, state, and federal government, but this is a real treat because I have seen NIU through the lens of a local agribusinessman all of my life, and I think it continues to have a very rich and promising future. I look forward to joining. It's an honor to serve alongside these other trustees and all of you, the members of the NIU family. Thank you very much.
And again, Lee, welcome to the board. It's great to have you. Okay, at this point in time, we will move on to number four on our agenda, where we approve the agenda. Is there a motion to approve this agenda as proposed for today's meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chair Gales.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The meeting agenda is approved. We now need to move on to number five. Approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of August 24th of 2023? Thank you, Chair Wasowitz. Is there a second?
Second, Butler.
Thank you, Chair Butler. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I will decide to abstain. I was not present at this meeting.
Thank you very much, Lee. Okay, hearing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The minutes of August 24th of 2023 are approved. We now move to number six, Chair's comments and announcements. At this point in time, I'd like to welcome any members of the University Advisory Committee who are present today to speak. Does anybody from the UAC have any comments for the board? Okay. Thank you very much. Chair's comments. We have a full agenda today, which will include 11 recommendations for approval, including three that will then go later on this morning to a special meeting for approval, because those items are time sensitive. I appreciate the efforts of the university leadership to continue to fully vet these items and think through responsible spending based on fiscal resources and university priorities. Items brought to the board continue to support university goals and priorities, and that is what we will again see before us today. And I know you're all impressed with my red glasses that I just got, so I see you looking at them, and they're like, wow, where'd he get those? Eyebobs. Okay. At this point in time, we'll move on to number seven, public comment. We wish to recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and the Board of Trustee bylaws by registering their written request to address the board. Mr. Perry, have you received any timely requests to address this meeting?
Mr. Chair, we have no public comment this morning.
Thank you very much. At this point in time, we will move to agenda item eight. At this point in time, I would ask Vice President and Chief Financial Officer George Middlemiss to present the university financial update. These are information-only items, so we will not be voting on them, but we will take questions at the end from any of the board members. At this point in time, George?
So agenda item 8A is the annual financial summary as of June 30, 2023. I would like to ask Andrew Rogers, Associate Vice President for Budget and Financial Planning, to present the item.
Good morning. I'll keep my comments brief this morning in light of the full agenda. This annual financial summary represents activity through the preliminary results of the fiscal year 23 financial audit. Overall, revenues trailed budget by $1.3 million for the full year. Expenses exceeded budget by $5.4 million. The overall deficit for the fiscal year reached $18.6 million. Which represents about 4.7% of total revenues. This annual financial summary presents the results alongside prior year results and disaggregates between structural and non-structural aspects of fiscal year 23 activities. Structural, in this sense, represents the recurring aspects of the university budget, excluding capital repairs and grant-supported programs, like the Pell Grant and sponsored research. This is the final time that a structural basis will be used for these quarterly reports as we transition to an alternative approach. I'll talk more about that transition during the presentation of the fiscal year 24 Q1 financial summary in a few minutes. The results reported in the fiscal year 23 annual financial summary are generally consistent with expectations. The third quarter financial summary presented in May was 98% accurate with respect to total revenues and 97% accurate with respect to total expenses. That accuracy improved more when focused on the structural components of the budget. Total structural revenues and structural expenses each came in at 98.1% of what was projected with the third quarter financial summary. Across the full year, a notable variance from the budget occurred in investment income. NIU benefited from sustained interest rates that were higher than those of recent years. Additionally, personnel expenses finished $4.4 million below budget, though some of those savings were redeployed in other areas, including contractual services, which exceeded budget by $3.1 million. As we look ahead to fiscal year 24, it's likely that some of these fiscal year 23 trends will continue as we'll see in the fiscal year 24 first quarter financial summary. That's an overview of this item and the information within it. I'm happy to address any questions that you may have.
Andrew, thank you for the update. Clearly, we have witnessed firsthand the winding down of pandemic relief funding and its impact on our financials. While this funding, the relief money funding was identified as non-structural, or as we call it, non-recurring revenue, it was a rather large source for us nonetheless. This loss, in conjunction with increasing costs and critical investments in operations, infrastructure, and personnel, identifies how and why the deficit continues to grow to the number of just under $18.6 million deficit for fiscal year 23, as Andrew identified. As our next item is the Q1 summary of FY 24, I will hold further comment until we have presented that summary. But before proceeding, I'll ask the board if they have any questions of Andrew relative to fiscal year 23 numbers. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to 8B.
All right, agenda item 8B is the quarterly financial summary, fiscal year 2024, first quarter as of September 30, 2023. I would like to ask Andrew Rogers, Associate Vice President for Budget and Financial Planning, to present the item.
Thank you. In addition to reporting activity through September 30th, this agenda item also projects out full year results. Please note that this item presents the budget three different ways: the recurring budget, the non-recurring budget, and the total or all types budget that is a roll-up of the previous two. Recurring in the report and in future quarterly reports represents the regular activities of the university that are not short-term or temporary in nature. Included in recurring is regular spending for capital repairs and capital equipment. Also included in this recurring definition is federally supported financial aid programs like the Pell Grant and Federal Work Study. A specific line item in the tables shows the revenue and associated spending for these federally supported financial aid programs. Through the first 3 months of the fiscal year, net revenue is meeting overall budget expectations. For the full year outlook, stronger than expected interest income is projected, resulting in a projection that is $2 million better than the budget plan at a $29.8 million deficit. This is an early year projection, so we will adjust the full year outlook in subsequent quarters. The next such report will include second quarter activity through December 31st and is scheduled for the February FATFO meeting. I'm happy to try to answer any questions that you may have.
Again, thank you, Andrew. First off, I just want to say that I think the effort that we've made over the last few years and the commitment that we've made as a part of the FATFO committee for fiscal transparency has been terrific. I will say that 3 years ago or so, or 2 years ago, trying to make heads or tails of our financials and understand where we need to apply our focus was rather tough. So thank you. Thanks to the team for the way we've been able to remodel the fiscal reporting so that there's more, not just transparency, but we can understand it better, both as a board and as a public. It has been extremely helpful. We've seen the transition to recurring, non-recurring revenue, and moving forward, you will also notice, as Andrew mentioned before, that we are taking both the revenue and expense from grants out and removing them from the financial reporting because, in theory, they are oftentimes restricted monies. These grants come in for specific projects that they have to be spent for on that project. And The money coming in should match the money going out. So in essence, the revenue and expense from grants should offset each other. So we are removing those so we have a true picture of what the university leadership has control over from a budget standpoint. These changes, as I said before, result in a much clearer picture in terms of what areas will require focus in order to close the growing deficit that we have, which, as we know, in fiscal year 24, the budget is just under $32 million loss. We, as the board, continue to remind our university community the importance of financial stability and a balanced multi-year budget. I want to emphasize the extreme confidence that the board has in our leadership and the NIU community to make the right and necessary changes towards our goal of a balanced budget. Now, I will ask if there's any questions from the board for Andrew relative to 8B and the fiscal 24 first quarter numbers. Which, by the way, it is nice to see us make and exceed our budget for the first quarter. It's always good to get off to a good start.
Mr. Chair, just one comment. I just want
Trustee Gales.
To give the staff compliments on your ability to provide this information in a clear and concise manner. I'm not a financial guy, and for me to sit down and be able to understand what you've given us is great. I am concerned, of course, about the deficit, but I'm also pleased to see that you guys are taking positive steps to try to reduce that deficit, and this is an ongoing process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further comment? Lee?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the analysis at this point, and being new to this, I will be listening a lot today and in subsequent meetings to get up to speed as quickly as possible. In the volatility of the current interest rate markets and in looking at your mix of cash and investment holdings, do you deploy a strategy how to maximize at these current levels for, you know, to build on the opportunity for more interest rate revenue going forward?
We do. I'm happy to defer to Vice President Middlemist if he'd like to address this, but we have an investment committee for the institution that advises the CFO on which instruments to leverage our cash through.
Okay.
And we are, as a public body, restricted in our opportunities to do that, but we do meet at least quarterly to review that investment performance and make decisions or proposed decisions to the CFO.
And I did get a bit of a briefing last week and look forward to more discussions on that going forward.
And,
thank you.
And we have Jason Askin who will talk a little bit about our cash and investments.
Great. Thank you.
We should also let the record know that Trustee Athas and Trustee Herrero have joined our meeting at approximately 8:48. The clock is wrong. Come on. Throwing me off.
It's a budget issue.
I'm sorry? Yes. We'll have a comment from Dr. Freeman.
I just want to thank the board for working so closely with the university leadership to come to this new budget reporting structure that leaves sponsored projects in the sponsored projects report, gives us extra insight into the nature of our recurring and non-recurring expenses. But I also want to reassure the board that the leadership of the university takes the fiscal situation seriously. I want to commend both Vice President Middlemiss and our interim executive vice president and provost, Dr. Elish Piper, for creating understandable graphics and tables to take budget forward in this format, but in other formats to our university community in shared governance and in shared leadership forums to make sure that everybody understands how we have the opportunity to both increase revenue and reduce expenses to achieve our goal of a balanced budget where we have alignment of recurring expenses and revenues, and to do so thinking of our budget as an all-funds multi-year budget. So I want both the public who are listening, but also the board who has fiscal responsibility to understand that we are taking this seriously. Our university community is working very hard together to identify the opportunities to achieve what we want. And certainly the leadership is continuing to advocate to the state, as you'll hear in a later item.
Well, I can attest to that. I was on campus yesterday in Barsema Hall speaking to a few of the classes, and I tried to stop by twice to see Acting Dean Schembechler, and the first time she was in a budget meeting with the provost. The second time I was there, she was in a budget meeting with her staff. So I failed to see her yesterday because of her focus on budget. But yes, I appreciate your comments, Dr. Freeman. Thank you. Chair Wasowitz?
Yeah, and just to add to that as well, I mean, we, just so the public knows, this is not a surprise to us that we're showing a $30 million loss. We're very well aware of what's going on here. So if you see a lack of questioning, we've already been very much on top of this for a while. So, and there's, you know, we talked about this for a couple of years when the COVID money was coming in, is that that was a sugar high. And now we're faced with realities of what's really going on. So, and we'll be dealing with that. So we're, just want to let everybody know we're on top of it. So, and I know President Freeman and her crew is, and her staff is on top of this, so.
Well, I want to make light again of the fact that when you look at Q1 for fiscal year 24, we've gotten off to a good start. Right, we have in some cases exceeded what we thought we were going to do or what the budget was for Q1 24. And you know, for everybody in this room who has been involved in any business of any kind, you know that if you get behind the first quarter, it's really hard to catch up. So it's really encouraging to me to see us make and or exceed our budget for Q1. So that's great news. And again, Andrew, thank you to your team, George, your entire team for the work that you've done here over the last few years in getting budget reporting transparent, simple to understand, so that we know where to apply focus. So thank you. Okay, if there's no further questions, we'll move on to agenda item 8C.
So agenda item 8C is the annual report of cash and investments for the period ending September 30th, 2023. I'd like to ask Jason Askin, Controller, to present the item.
Jason actually wearing a sport coat?
He is.
Wow. Awesome.
I'm so jealous right now.
Good morning, trustees and President Freeman. Thank you for the opportunity to present the report on investments for the first quarter of fiscal year 2024. I wanted to briefly call attention to the title or the heading here. It's labeled annual report on cash and investments. This should be periodic report on cash investments for September 30th, 2023. We do the annual report at fiscal year end. So last quarter was the annual report. This quarter is the periodic report. Minor technicality. A written update is provided in your material, so I'll just be reviewing a couple of key points from the report. The university's total holdings balance was just over $129 million as of September 30th, 2023, and of this total, approximately $68 million is available for daily operations, providing approximately 60 days of cash on hand. The total holdings balance is down $13 million from this same time last year. This is primarily as a result of increases in cash disbursements, which is slightly offset by increases from timing of financial aid cash receipts. The overall annualized rate of return on cash and investments was just over 5% for the quarter, came in at 5.34%, and interest income was $1.5 million for the first quarter. This represents an increase in interest earned of approximately $856,000 when compared to the same quarter of fiscal year 2023. The Federal Open Market Committee voted to hold the federal funds rate flat at its October meeting, maintaining the federal funds interest rate range between 5.25 and 5.5%. Economists currently anticipate that the committee will vote to keep the federal funds rate flat again at its December 2023 meeting. These rates continue to provide increased investment yields for the university. We will continue to monitor the market changes and consider all available options to strengthen the university's cash position within the limitations of the Illinois Public Funds Investment Act. Thank you. That concludes my prepared remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Jason. Are there any comments from the board for Jason? Trustee Herrero.
I just have a question. So it says we have 129 million, of which 68 can be used for daily operations. Is the rest of it just restricted and we're not able to use it for operations?
Not exactly. To Trustee Strom's earlier question about how we maximize investment yields while maintaining liquidity, the investment advisory group meets quarterly and reviews the university's cash position along with the market yields. So that difference between the total cash position and the amount available for daily operations is largely funds that are earmarked for investment so that we have those available to maximize those yields.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Further questions? Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Okay, we will now move on to agenda item 9, the university recommendations and action items. At this point in time, again, I would like to ask George to take the lead.
So agenda item 9A is the fiscal year 2025 appropriations request. Each year, staff seeks the Board of Trustees' approval of the overall level of state funding request for the upcoming fiscal year. The amount is recognized as the university's formal budget request through the State of Illinois budget development process, including submissions to the Illinois Board of Higher Education and the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Staff will also use this request when developing the university's detailed internal budget for fiscal year 25 and other budgetary reports for the Illinois General Assembly. For fiscal year 25, Northern Illinois University requests base operating funding of $113.4 million. An additional $3 million is requested to support new initiatives specified in the board report. The total operating and initiative funding request is $116.4 million. I want to stress that a lot of thought went into this request. We tried to balance the financial need of the university, the responsibility of the state to support our institution and higher education, but also recognizing the demands on the state's budget and the political realities of how it all works together. We believe that this request, while somewhat aggressive, is a fair request of the state. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, and Facilities and Operations Committee endorse the budget request of $116.4 million and asks that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting on November 9, 2023, in order to ensure timely preparation and submission of the university's FY25 budget request to the IBHE and subsequent reports to the General Assembly.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9A?
So moved, Bozowitz.
Is there a second?
Second, Gales.
Thank you. Is there any discussion?
Did we ask for enough?
did we ask for enough? Well, I think that's a fair question.
That's a challenging question. I think that the money guy in the room would have liked to have asked for $32 million more money from the state. I'm kind of sounding like a broken record, but when we look back at fiscal year 2015, our state award or our state support was $91.1 million. When we fast forward to fiscal year 23, which was last fiscal year, our state support was $91.1 million. If we adjust for inflation from that time to 2024, if the state had only supported inflation attached to the state request, we would have had $121 million in our state support going into fiscal year 24. That's $30 million. But I think that you have to also be really cognizant of the fact that the state's no different than we are, right? So when people are coming to me and asking for money, I'm like, so the pie is this big, and I can cut the pie lots of different ways, but I can only cut the pie what I have. Yes. And the state has the same challenges. They have lots of demands, not just higher education. Higher education is an important part, I think, of the state and the state's economy, but they have other things that they have to balance with that. I think that the request was fair. There was a lot of internal discussion on what the right amount was. And this one seemed like it was bold enough, but not so bold that it would create friction with the state.
Very good.
I think there was a discussion that Dr. Freeman and George and I had, and others, a couple of weeks ago as we prepared for the FACFO meeting, about just balance, right? That if, as George stated, sure, we would love to ask for another 32, million or whatever the exact number was above and beyond this, but you get to a point where from a credibility standpoint, you start to lose your credibility in the numbers. So there's a fine balance of asking for a number that's credible and believable and a number that the state would look at and just not even give any recognition to and just begin to ignore us. So I don't know if there's a further comment you want to add to that, President Freeman, but
I think as a public institution, we always want to demonstrate that we are good stewards of public funds. And there are two parts to that. There is asking for what we need to deliver on our public mission to the state of Illinois, and deliver a return on the investment in terms of our graduates, in terms of the way we support the state's economy. And then it's showing that we are doing everything possible to be efficient and that we are in a continuous state of trying to become more efficient, to look at our administrative processes and to ask the state for help with that. So I'll be talking in the RILA committee a little bit more about our legislative agenda as public higher education in Illinois, but I think the budget request is one piece of that. Our internal efforts to demonstrate that we are good stewards of public funds and using them efficiently, and then our opportunities to ask the state to be a partner, to help us be more efficient, to make sure that our funding is adequate and equitable and stable. And so I look forward to having that discussion. But I think Trustee Borsima and Vice President Middlemiss, you summed it up. There's a balance related to stewardship, to credibility, and to our ability to serve our students in our state.
Thank you. Trustee Strom?
In that same vein, how do we analyze how we compare to the other university requests? And I'm assuming we do. But do we fall within the realm of percentage increases annually that match what others are doing?
Every university brings its budget request forward on a slightly different schedule. So I wouldn't say there is a lot of coordination with the specific items, although our legislative liaisons do speak to each other all the time. What I can tell you about this year is that all of the presidents and chancellors of the public higher ed institutions understand that we are all facing an operating environment where inflationary costs have resulted in real increases in the cost of the commodities we purchase, of the contracts, of investing in our people, and that this is the time for us to come together with a legislative agenda that makes the administration, the governor, and our legislators understand that despite the recognition by the current executive branch and the generosity of the legislature in the past couple years, the historic disinvestment that preceded that has lasting effects. In fiscal year 16, we took a 70% cut in our appropriated funds during the budget impasse. And that has lasting effects. And so the public university presidents and chancellors are coming together. We will be meeting with the deputy governor for higher ed and others to just reinforce our commitment to partnership, our commitment to delivering on our public mission, helping economic growth in Illinois, but to that partnership really requiring that the operating environment, the value of higher ed, are recognized.
My only reason for asking that is if we were requesting less than the other universities in the Illinois system, and there was a pot of money that the state was dividing up, we want to make sure we fight and request for our fair share. if there is a fair share.
You know, I would say that we have never actually had our request met in the last decade, so I don't think we're asking for too much. I will say that, you know, universities that ask for more don't see any more than we do, but I see Dr. Streb reaching for his microphone, so with permission from the chair, he may want to make a comment.
Sure. I was just going to say that until there's a different funding mechanism in place, all universities, public universities in Illinois get the same increase, decrease, or held flat, or whatever. So.
And I can assure you, having observed Dr. Freeman go to Springfield for the past 6 years now, I think we're going on to defend our budget request. She's one of the best fighters in the state. Trustee Herrera.
Yeah, so I can share a little bit about how IBHE makes its recommendations. I sit on the Illinois Board of Higher Education, and our recommendation, the recommendation we send to the state, is based on what all of the colleges have submitted. I doubt it's public right now of what everyone has asked for, but what I can say is it really varies this year of what the approach that different universities are taking, and I think our approach is a good one, which is this is what we need, right? And it's not even entirely what we need, but and being transparent about why and how it's broken up, I think helps IBHE to make a very comprehensive recommendation and have a case for making that recommendation, but I don't think there's a big pool of money that everyone that we'd be missing out on. I'll say that. Yeah.
Thank you. Further discussion on 9A? Okay. Hearing none, we have a motion to approve. We have a second. We've had discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9A is passed. Agenda item 9B.
Agenda item 9B is the fiscal year 2025 Illinois Board of Higher Education capital budget request. The IBHE capital budget request is submitted prior to the budget year in order to meet IBHE and state capital project review and approval submission schedules. The capital budget request consists of two principal categories of projects requesting state funding support, and a third category that provides notification of anticipated non-instructional projects that might eventually require specific IBHE approval. There are 11 capital projects totaling approximately $600 million and 15 capital renewal projects totaling approximately $160 million. The Taft Wastewater Treatment Plant Replacement Project is included in the third category for $3.5 million as part of the submission. The state's appropriation process is better aligned to have this discussed and approved at the November meeting. We submit these appropriations requests to the IBHE in late October prior to the November Board of Trustee Committee meeting. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting on November 9th, 2023.
Thank you very much, George. Is there a motion to approve Agenda Item 9B?
So move, Wasowitz.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Thank you, Trustee Strom. Is there any discussion? Trustee Gales?
You know, from a personal standpoint, I'm hoping that we can see this boiler replacement come off this list. I've been here since 2019, it keeps popping up.
Further question or comment? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of Agenda Item 9B say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda Item 9B is passed. Agenda Item 9C.
Now we get into the slog. So Agenda Item 9C is the Husky Stadium Brigham Field Artificial Turf Replacement. Replacement of the existing artificial turf at the NIU Husky Stadium Brigham Field is considered a necessary improvement for the field to remain appropriate and competitive for college-level sports. The current stadium playing surface is past useful life, and significant lead time is required for the specialized materials with the intent of avoiding impact to the fall 2024 season. The project has an estimated cost of $1.1 million. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 7th, 2023.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve Agenda Item 9C?
So move, Wasowitz.
Is there a second?
Second, Gales.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Chair Barsema, I'm just curious, if we upgrade the field, will this help us play any better in the last 5 minutes and 30 seconds of a game?
I think it might.
If we could answer that question. I do have a question relative to the playing surface that we've chosen or that we plan to choose. I know there's many different varieties, or at least there's several different varieties of artificial turf. I'm not sure many is the right word to use, but and some are better for player safety than others. So if we could have some discussion about what we are choosing and why we chose it and how it feeds into player safety, that would be appreciated.
I'd like to invite John Chaney from Athletics to come up and have me participate in that conversation.
I thought you were an AstroTurf specialist.
I'm better than you might realize.
Good morning. So the reason for somewhat vagueness of the request is we are evaluating multiple vendors, both that are, there's actually two primary vendors that are both with the IPEC purchasing co-op that we're looking at their products. I also have our head athletic trainer and director of sports medicine, Phil Voris, with us as well, who can answer any specifics potentially that you may have regarding player safety. Obviously, natural grass would be a great opportunity, but based on our climate and the fact that we utilize the stadium for both practice as well as games, and so it's got about 180, say, days of use per year type of a thing between spring, summer, and fall, that it's just not practical and actually would become a much more unsafe surface based on that much wear and tear, not to mention maintenance costs and those type of things. So turf is definitely the direct, artificial turf is the direction that we need to go with our facility. Looking into that, there's multiple generations of different types of turf. Some of what you're hearing right now in the NFL is about a monofilament or slip film or these different things. Those are just basically what has been designed by the turf companies of different, makes different aesthetics as well as different type of structure of the turf, whether it stands up more, whether it lays over more, whether there's more turf in the mix. It's similar to carpet. If you get a heavier weight carpet, you obviously get a thicker carpet versus a, the lighter the carpet or the lighter the turf, the more infill. So there's a little bit of a debate between which is better to have more fibers in the surface or more infill in the surface. And so obviously you talk to the turf companies, they've got their marketing groups and their studies that support, you know, their different products and those type of things. So we are looking to the NFL right now as far as they're doing a lot of studies in this area. There's players, the NFL Players Union is heavily involved. Obviously they are very conscious of injury prevention and those type of things on their surfaces. And so as we can get a little bit clarity as that, we are doing our due diligence to make sure that whatever surface we select will be the right one for our players, student athletes, security, safety, and security.
So what is the criteria that you're going to use in terms of selecting the vendor and selecting the type of turf? Do you have a list of priorities or criteria that you're using?
We haven't created the matrix yet. We are working through that right now. We are looking at the studies as to what, obviously if similar to helmets or any of the study, there's typically, as the NFL does a study or those type of things, they'll say these are in the green category, these are in the yellow category, red category type of products. So you want to avoid the red and the yellow as much as possible and stay within those. Right now there isn't necessarily any of the products that we are looking at that would be considered subpar. But we are going to do our due diligence. As I said, that's part of the reason why it's in the November, so that we have a couple months to work with those. It's not just going to be a price-based purchase. We'll look at those different studies and criterias, as well as talk to other teams that have used those. Phil has a great network. He also works with the NFL, so he's able to get some information from them as well. And so we'll do our best to determine, you know, which is the right for our climate, for our section, and for our student athletes, as well as obviously they're across the nation. These products have already been installed, so we'll look at other schools as well and get those recommendations.
I know we've reached end of life on the turf we have today, but in general, are you happy with the performance of the turf that we chose a decade ago? Or
yeah, overall, it's held up well. It's a quality field. It's the same field in the stadium as it is in the Chesick Indoor Facility. Just that because of the weather, the outdoor field obviously aged and weathers differently than indoor facility. But the aesthetics of it is comes to play a little bit, as far as if you look at the field, you may see that the fibers are laid over, and they're designed to do that and break down over time. So there's some things like that that and once you reach the warranty period, obviously you want to start looking into end of life and making sure that you're not putting our student athletes at risk by having a non-warrantied field surface.
Brother, Trustee Wasowitz, and then we'll go to Trustee Gale.
So we're looking at 10 years for this to?
So one product has a 10-year life and one product has an 8-year life.
8 years.
Okay. Yeah. And then, I mean, I don't know a lot about this, only stuff that I've read about cancer-causing agents in the actual, the ground, yeah, tires that are in there,
yeah,
things
so,
like that. So do you know anything about that?
So the infill is has been researched as far as carcinogenic, more so for some of the youth sports. They use a lot of this at different parks, mm-hmm, and those type of things. So there's a lot more exposure maybe in that age group type of a scenario. From what I understand, it hasn't really been directly correlated with the studies. However, they are coming out with different types of infill. There's use of more like ground up shoes, the soles of your shoes, rather than tire rubber, or there's a different mix of that type of stuff. There's more sand that can be used rather than rubber. And there's also green infills of coconut shells and different components, that cork. So there's different things that we can also look into those if that's a concern of the board. Obviously, there's price impacts for different things, but.
And then would we be replacing the Chesick Center then too at some point? Or?
At some point we will need to, but currently it's still meeting, okay, all the criteria that we need for safety.
Trustee Gales?
You answered the question about how long this thing's going to last. You know, I'm in that roof replacement area right now, so that, you know, it's kind of key to me. I was going to ask, does the MAC set a standard for turf and its replacement, and do we have to get approval ultimately from the MAC conference for where we install the stuff?
No, there's industry standards as far as the it's called the GMAC. It's the impact ratio for concussions or some of those type of things that you hit, and so there's industry standards within the turf industry that they have to meet and those type of things, but as long as they are meeting those criteria, it's really an institutional decision as to what product to use.
I will just add to Trustee Gales, when the MAC is considering adding an institution, the quality of the facilities is one of the things we look at from the lens of player safety. So I assume the conference would comment if they felt that one of the member institutions was not creating facilities that were commensurate with what the conference and the institutions stand for.
I think Trustee Strom had a question.
Just a simple clarification. This proposal is to replace the field, the north end zone, and the sidelines, the entire package of turf?
Yeah, and welcome to the board.
Pardon?
Welcome to the board.
Well, thank you.
But yes, the current plan is that the actual playing surface through the width of where the player boxes, basically the rectangle plus about 30 feet on each side from end zone to end zone, will be replaced with a higher end turf, a performance space turf, and then the the farther end zones closer to the Jordan Center, as well as all the way to the video board and the far end zones, or far sidelines, excuse me, will be a more affordable product, but it'll be still comparable, but it doesn't have to meet the performance specs, so we'll be able to economize a little bit that way.
Because the north end zone and the sidelines date back to 2007?
Yes.
Okay, so basically everything's going to be new?
Correct.
All right.
Further questions or comments? Okay. John, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. We have a second on agenda item 9C. We've had discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All of those opposed? Agenda item 9C is passed. Agenda item 9D.
Agenda item 9D is the Chick Evans Fieldhouse Tennis Facility Upgrades Phase 2. The Evans Fieldhouse was originally opened in 1957, with portions renovated in 2003 and then again in 2022 to create the Nelson Tennis Center. The locker room areas are mostly original to the facility and require updating to support the intercollegiate program. The university is requesting approval to renovate Chick Evans Fieldhouse, Evans Fieldhouse, locker room facilities to supporting the NIU tennis teams. The existing spaces are outdated and in need of improvement to align with the recent improvements made to the Nelson Tennis Center playing surfaces. Supported by donation funding, the improvements are estimated at $380,000. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 7th, 2023.
Thank you. George, is there a motion to approve agenda item 9D?
So moved, Torero.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Strom.
Thank you, Trustee Strom. Any discussion?
This money is donated already, right?
So I think some of the donations have been identified.
So it's a pass-through.
Yeah.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of agenda item 9D say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9D is passed. Agenda item 9E.
There you go.
Agenda item 9E is the DeKalb campus 2024 roof repairs. Roof assessments are conducted through regular monitoring of leak reports and augmented with thermography scanning to identify, access, and prioritize repair deficiencies. Roofs targeted for repair work in 2024 include Neptune Central, Wirtz Hall, Stevenson Central Core, Founders Library, and Altgeld Hall. Roofs to be reviewed for scope potential repair work in 2025 or 2026 include La Tourette, Davis, Psychology, Computer Science, Evans Field House, and the Convocation Center. Contracting efforts will be orchestrated over the coming months to help ensure work can be scheduled in 2024 with the least disruption in university operations. Packaging of common roof repairs across multiple buildings into one project and contract effort will increase efficiencies for improved contract pricing, anticipated to total $2 million. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 7th, 2023.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9E?
So moved, Wasowitz.
Is there a second?
Second, Gales.
Thank you. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of agenda item 9E, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9E is passed. Agenda item 9F.
Agenda item 9F is the chilled water plant chiller number 4 overhaul. The university is requesting to inspect and overhaul a water chiller at the East Chilled Water Plant. Unlike the project approved in November 2022 due to a failed drive, this project seeks to proactively inspect and overhaul this chiller to extend the life of the system and minimize the risk of unexpected failure. This project is planned to be executed over the winter and early spring to allow the plant to support the next cooling season. The total project cost is estimated not to exceed $400,000. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 7th, 2023.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9F?
So moved, Gales.
Is there a second?
Second, Wasowitz.
Thank you. Any discussion? Trustee Athos.
I just wanted to be reminded. So these projects that we're talking about, they're all part of when we approve projects for the overall look at the university that we do. These are, you know, they're not something new that's come up. They're something that's been part of the planning processes we've been going through.
So I think that's fair, okay. Trustee.
I thought so. I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, we've had chillers and boilers on our agenda for years. We can't seem to get rid of them.
We will have them for the future as well.
Okay, further questions or comments on agenda item 9F? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of agenda item 9F say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9F is passed. Agenda item 9G.
We are cruising now. Agenda item 9G is the cell tower land lease, the NIU as the lessor. The university is requesting to establish a lease with the Towers LLC for the construction and operation of a cellular tower on campus. The primary benefit to the university and the surrounding community would be the enhancement of cellular service in the form of improved reception and call volumes, particularly required for high attendance events. The targeted location is a site south of the NIU soccer and track and field complex on the west side of campus. This is a revenue-generating agreement anticipated to be approximately a magnitude of $500,000 over the potential full 50-year term. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 7th, 2023.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9G?
So moved, Herrero.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Athos.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on agenda item 9G?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. Having had experience over the years with towers on agricultural land, is there agreement in the lease that if for new technology or the tower is taken down prior to the termination of the lease that the ground is returned to its original state?
The answer to that question is yes.
Thank you.
I got confirmation from John.
Trustee Butler?
I don't know anything at all about these matters, but it seems to me 50 years is a long time and a lot can happen in 50 years. So is there any exclusivity in the lease agreement? Would this be the only company that we were permitting to do this kind of work on our campus? And
I'll ask John Heckman to come up and help with the answer. We're currently in negotiations, and I think that's one of the sticking points.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make. We're in negotiations with it now, so there are a lot of details, the terms that we're still working out and understanding ourselves. This is new for the campus to get sort of into the cell tower business. We're not. This is going to be some other company doing this. We're just leasing the land, but still trying to understand this industry. There is a capital investment being made by the company, so the longer lease makes it better for them to generate the business they need and to make it viable, so I understand that. And so we're working through those terms and what are the terms where they have a right to terminate, we may have a right to terminate, and we're trying to understand all that and come to some agreement.
I will say that in my past experience with land leases, 50 years has been the typical term, usually not less than 40. Yeah, usually not less.
Yeah. Further questions or comments? Okay. Hearing none, we have a motion to approve. We have a second. We've had discussion. All those in favor of agenda item 9G, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9G is passed. Agenda item 9H.
Agenda item 9H is the Stevenson Tower Wireless Network Expansion and Upgrade. Northern Illinois University provides data network services to students, faculty, and staff via wired and wireless connectivity on campus. The university is requesting to expand and enhance Wi-Fi coverage and capacity in Stevenson Tower's housing complex in support of student technology mobility. Anticipated costs for this phase of ongoing Wi-Fi expansion are $750,000, inclusive of labor, hardware, and materials. The project is anticipated to be completed by the summer of 2024. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting December 7th, 2023.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9H?
So made.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Moore.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on agenda item 9H?
Just one
Trustee Gales?
Does this upgrade, does this allow for high speed? Are we getting the best technology? And does it provide for future growth as we look at the next decade?
So I'm going to answer it to the best of my ability, and if I'm incorrect in any of this, I'll ask Matt Parks, our CIO, to come up. So the upgrade of Stevenson is bringing it to current standards, right? So it's going to be a much better experience for our students. I think we always plan for potential for future growth in these projects. And this is the second to last complex in residence halls. So we have Stevenson to do, and then after we're done with Stevenson, we'll just have the Grant complex. And then Wi-Fi for our students in the residence halls will have been upgraded and complete.
Okay.
Matt, did I do okay? Matt says good.
Further questions or comments? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of agenda item 9H, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9H is passed. Agenda item 9I.
Agenda item 9I is the Internet Exchange Point land lease with NIU as the lessor. The university is requesting to establish a no-cost lease with Connected Nation Internet Exchange Points, LLC, a not-for-profit entity, for the construction and operation of an Internet Exchange Point, an IXP, on campus. The primary benefit to the university is to enhance the data connectivity, capacity, and timeliness of transmission. Final locations for the IXP site are being evaluated and will be determined based on connectivity to the existing community fiber networks and data support to the university. The site would encumber about 2 acres of land and involve the construction of an approximately $8 million facility with related utility connections to the nearest fiber network. Due to the capital investment to be made by the lessee, a 40-year lease term will be established. The schedule for execution depends on the lessee obtaining grant opportunities in the coming months. In-kind contribution of approximately 2 acres of land through a 40-year lease is estimated at $20,000. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 7, 2023.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9I?
So move, Wasowitz.
Is there a second?
Gale, second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
So I'm curious, where's
Trustee Wasowitz?
Where's the land at?
We're still evaluating the site.
Okay, so we're looking at a few different.
Yes.
So this would be something probably like on the edge?
Probably.
Okay.
I looked at John and he didn't say no, so.
Trustee Butler.
So again, I don't know very much about any of this and I have no idea what this is, but how does this relate to our institution's historic position as a provider of internet connectivity, whereby, as I've understood it, we actually are a provider of that service for our region. Does this do anything to alter that relationship or in any way put us in competition with this entity that we're developing a relationship with?
Let me try to take that, Trustee Butler, and then I know that we have Corinne Bredberg and others in the audience who could add. I think that this is very consistent with NIU's commitment to be an anchor institution and to help the communities that surround us have access to things that have become essential, like high-speed internet, that access to cloud applications that require bandwidth. The form that those things take just changes as technology evolves. The way that this particular opportunity came about is through our connection to the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. Former Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, Jerry Blasey, attended a session at APLU where Connected Nation made a presentation about how they were working with anchor institutions who were public or land-grant universities in other states to ensure that areas outside major metropolitan areas had access to IXPs and the advantages that they bring. Vice President Blasey came back, and through the Illinois Innovation Network, he contacted the state agency that is responsible for looking at IT across our state. And they were very supportive, as was the Innovation Network, in saying right now the IXPs in Illinois are in the Chicago metropolitan area. Having those as the sole IXPs for the state creates some vulnerability, not only for rural communities, but also for really critical, important facilities like our national laboratories that we host. Through Dr. Blasey's efforts to work with the state and with the IIN, it became apparent that Connected Nation would have an opportunity to work not only with NIU, but also with Southern Illinois University in Carbondale and the University in Illinois Springfield to expand geographic coverage in our state, decreasing the state's vulnerability and allowing all of our public universities to fulfill their mission to help all communities across the state. So I think this is very consistent with our overall mission and provides just a new place for us to fulfill the role that we have played previously with other entities. And there is no direct competition with another university activity. I don't know if Corinne or Matt, you want to add anything to that?
Trustee Strom?
This is interesting information, and I'm not familiar with Connected Nation Internet Exchange Points, LLC. I see they're a nonprofit entity. Are they the only potential provider of this? How have we vetted them as an entity to understand what they, you know, their history and work? I see they're working with Southern Illinois and then the U of I Springfield.
I don't know if there's, Corinne, if you want to speak to that or Matt or John. I can say that Dr. Blasey reached out to the other universities that have more mature arrangements to make sure that this was a reputable company, that they were delivering on the promises that they made, that the contracts were working. He also reached out to the state to make sure that the state felt that this was an arrangement that would be appropriate, and they did due diligence. And so I feel they came to campus, they spoke to us, they spoke to, administration and finance, to the NIU Foundation, to other entities on campus. So I feel like we've done some research, but it may be that someone else wants to talk to it. The fact that they're a not-for-profit is actually very attractive to us because it goes along with that land-grant mission and anchor institution background.
So as President Freeman mentioned, we did have a lot of communications with Connected Nation. We had a lot of pre-meetings before they came to campus, and then we have also worked with Southern Carbondale and University of Illinois Springfield to make sure that we're all on the same page with Connected Nation. I think the biggest valid point of validity to Connected Nation and working with them is they have essentially two components of their company where they do contracting with state agencies, but then also have this kind of nonprofit point where they're building IXPs throughout the country. When Vice President Blasey talked to Matt Schmidt at Illinois Broadband, Matt was very familiar with them and had a good working relationship with them. And so to us, that proved a point that proved positive that we were able to continue discussions with them.
So it's a company that's been around a while. They're working with other universities across the nation?
Yes. As part of their goal, they have identified over 125 communities that they would like to work with. They did provide 5 additional letter of support that they have received from other institutions for similar grant opportunities.
Thank you.
Trustee Gales?
You know, it might be helpful, too, we dust off that old presentation we had about the ring that exceeds out that we're a part of, just so we can get an idea, prospectively, where we fit in this mix. I'm not saying I don't want you to jump up now, but maybe we could dust that off and it'll give us a little bit better perspective.
Further questions or comments? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on agenda item 9I. We've had a motion to approve. We've had a second. No further discussion. All those in favor of agenda item 9I, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Agenda item 9I has all the ayes and is passed. Agenda item 9J.
Agenda item 9J is the officer safety equipment refresh. In order to ensure officer safety, enhance public safety, and increase efficiency of operations, the Department of Public Safety is seeking to enter into a maximum 5-year agreement with a single vendor to provide an officer safety technology plan, including all equipment refreshes, relevant software licenses, accessories, and certification training. The goal is to encompass timely equipment refreshes for all supporting software and certifications in one procurement, allowing for greater operational efficiencies as opposed to purchasing equipment and support services on an as-needed basis. Over the maximum 5-year term, anticipated spend is not to exceed $775,000. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 7th, 2023.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9J?
So moved, Wasowitz.
Is there a second?
Second, Strom.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? And I see our chief of police here in the room. Thank you, Chief, for your service and the service of your force. We appreciate it very much. Any questions or comments? Trustee Gales.
I think when we were briefed on this, I asked the question of the equipment itself, whether or not we can resell it. And I think I was told that we cannot resell this equipment based on
That's correct.
What do we do? Do we trash this equipment or is it still used in some other capacity?
So we'll ask Chief Mitchell to come up and answer that question. While he's coming up, I have to say that I had the pleasure of having dinner with Chief Mitchell's son in Chicago on Saturday. What a nice, polite, just well-mannered young man. It was a true joy to meet Rob.
And that'll get you your next ticket.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah.
Well, have you ever met his mother?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Yes, he takes after his mother, absolutely. And let me also point out, since our CFO mentioned my son, the CFO was very generous to pick up the check for the entire table to include my son and some other strangers, and my son was very, very, him and his girlfriend were touched by that, so thank you, sir.
Very good.
And that was not prohibited by the gift ban. I just got to get that in.
Yes. I'm sorry. The question was, I apologize.
The refresh, what do we do with the equipment once it's at end of life?
Sure, sure. So right now, under the agreements that we have for our body-worn cameras and our tasers and our in-car cameras, we cannot and do not sell that equipment. It does not go back down state when it served its life purpose. We return it to the company to get an updated model of that piece of equipment.
Okay. Are we leasing or purchasing?
We are, the agreements call for leases because you will get replacement pieces of equipment. So these are leases.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments for Chief Mitchell? Okay, hearing none. Chief, thank you.
Thank you
for your service.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. We have a second on agenda item 9J. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9J is approved. Last but not least, agenda item 9K.
We are in the home stretch. Agenda item 9K is the Intercollegiate Athletics Air Charter Services for Basketball Teams. Intercollegiate Athletics requests permission to purchase air travel services for NIU men's and women's basketball teams for the 2023-24 season. The team will use air charter services for scheduled basketball games from January through March 2024. The request is for one season at a not-to-exceed amount of $350,000. Men and women's basketball begin play in November with their first chartered flight in January 2024. This request is being brought to the special meeting in order to meet the procurement and contract time frame to secure flights for the season. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its special meeting on November 9th, 2023.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 9K?
So moved, Wozniewicz.
Is there a second?
Second, Butler.
Thank you very much. I'll begin the discussion. So I don't recall in the past air travel or air charter coming before the board for the basketball teams. I know football does just because of the size of the traveling party, but you know, I would assume that the size of the traveling party for basketball, both men's and women's, is significantly smaller. What size of plane are we talking here, and why is there a need to charter versus taking commercial?
Well, so there's multiple factors in it. Some of them are the plane, the availability. Most of it is due to the student-athlete access to get them back. These are mostly midweek games, and if they charter, they're able to fly back immediately after the game and make it to classes or courses the next day versus charter or commercial flights. Obviously, if your game's getting over at 9 o'clock at night, there may not be options, especially in several of the MAC cities. There's not a regional airport right in that city, so you're traveling, and so it adds to costs, hotels as well as flight times. Flight schedules, and then missed class time and those type of things. So it typically hasn't come to this board because of the number of flights. It kind of depends on the schedule. When you play Buffalo, you can fly commercial if it's a weekend game versus a weekday game, some of those type of things. The schedule doesn't come out until early September, I guess, for us to be able to finalize that. So it's not quite like football where you can be planned ahead and some of those type of things and schedule the flights. And so I think this year with this request, each team, men's and women's, are both taking 4 charter flights. And so just the collective cost based on the vendors that were selected on that bid raised it above the presidential approval threshold, and that's why it's at the board.
Can I just add one thing to
that? Dr. Freeman.
I really want to emphasize the academic nature of this investment. When you think about student athletes traveling on buses, even nice buses with internet versus the planes, one of the things that we have been so proud of with our men's and women's basketball team is the fact that we are one of very, very few schools in the entire country that will have nursing students playing intercollegiate basketball at the Division I level. And we have teams that are willing to rearrange their practice schedules to accommodate clinicals, and we make this investment in the marginal cost of air charter at the distances of the remote MAC schools versus buses to allow our student athletes to be student athletes. And I think that's something that we can be proud of.
Do we have a feel, John, for, I mean, clearly this is offsetting a cost of commercial flights and hotels, to your point. You finish a basketball game in Buffalo at 10 o'clock at night on a Friday or a Thursday or a Wednesday, and a commercial flight's not going to be available until the next day. So I understand that the budget for the charter is $350, but what would the net number be to us? Do we have a feel for that? Now we're not getting the cost of commercial flying in hotels.
Your travel party is probably roughly 25 people when you have coaches, support staff, student athletes, equipment, all those type of things. So these flights are roughly probably $60,000 a piece or somewhere in that range based on those. And you're probably spending 20 plus if you're doing it on a commercial basis plus hotel. So it's probably somewhere in the 200,000 of a delta, I would guess.
So the, okay.
40 to 60,000 for the charter versus 20 for the other.
Can I
just a simple question. Is the charter provided here out of DeKalb, Aurora, or Rockford?
It comes to DeKalb. Okay. It's in and out of DeKalb.
Okay. Further questions or comments? Okay. John, thank you.
Thank you.
So one quick question.
Well, I'm sorry.
When they get to the airport, do we have a bus service then that picks them up? How does...
Yeah, so once they arrive at the destination airport, it'll be a bus service that'll take them to the hotel or to the venue.
That's not included in this, so that's some other.
That's correct. That's already a budgeted expense within there.
Depends on if they've won or lost.
Yeah. Of course not.
Sorry, couldn't resist. Further questions for John? We good? Okay. We've had a motion to approve 9K. We've had a second. No further discussion. All those in favor of 9K say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 9K is passed. Okay, those are the action items for today. We move on to agenda item 10, which is the university reports, and I will again turn it over to CFO Middlemist.
NIU board regulations stipulate that the university presents regular summaries of designated activities, including financial and property transaction, as well as confirmation that state and federal requirements are met. The three reports provided include a comprehensive written update and are submitted in accordance with board regulations. We are happy to answer any questions on these reports.
Any questions or comments on any of the university written reports that were in your package? Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item number 11. Are there any other matters to come before this committee today? Okay, the next meeting of this committee will be on February 15th of 2024. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting of the FACFO committee?
So moved, Gales.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Trustee Butler. Ms. Doe, would you please call the roll to close this meeting?
Trustee Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Leland Strom?
Yes.
Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Committee Chair Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Wozwitz?
Yes.
Thank you. The meeting of the Finance Audit Compliance Facilities and Operations Committee is adjourned.